This episode of Boat Briefing is sponsored by Amico & Co. Based in Genoa, at the heart of the Mediterranean, Amico & Co. is a family-owned refit yard with more than two centuries of maritime heritage behind it. Today, the yard is widely recognised for its work on large yachts, offering a full-service refit capability delivered largely through its own in-house teams, from paint and engineering to complex conversions and structural projects. Rooted in one of Europe's great historic port cities, Amico combines tradition, technical depth, and long-term thinking, making it a trusted partner for owners, captains, and shipyards alike.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. I'm Caroline, editor of Boat International, and to coincide with our charter-themed April issue of Boat International magazine, I spoke to a charter yacht owner with years of experience, John Cordwell. His 73-metre Lursen Titania for charter with Burgess is one of the most consistently popular charter yachts afloat. So I asked him about his experience to discover how he would advise those considering putting their yacht on the charter market for the first time. So, John, you bought Titania at auction. At what point did you decide that it would be a serious charter business rather than a private yacht that offsets its costs?
Oh, that was decided right at the beginning. I knew I'd never got enough time to use it a lot. And in any event, I've got too many interests to be able to do that. Even if I was retired, I'd have too many interests. So as much as I love yachting, it was right from the beginning that it was going to be vastly a charter yacht rather than a private yacht.
Does chartering meaningfully change the economics of ownership in your experience?
Oh, massively, yeah. Yeah, but it's only if you take it seriously. You have to turn it into a business where you give absolute first-class service, give the client everything that they want, not something that you might think you want that might be uniquely to you rather than the client. So we try and make sure the yacht has got every single facility on board, and I try and make sure the crew operate in a way that's sensitive to the clients, not just sensitive to me. In other words, they have to have emotional IQ and understand what any set of clients might want from them and be able to react accordingly.
So that takes us actually to crew. So we've spoken separately just before this about the importance of crew. Everyone says that crew is everything when they're talking about yachts, either privately or for charter. Specifically, what do you think the best crew do differently that drives bookings or repeat clients?
Well, it's not specifically, it's everything. It's everything from the way they, with a very open smile, greet guests. Not effusive, not in your face. Nobody wants that. They just want a calm, smiley, friendly individual. And then some people want real friendship out of the crew and they want to chat to them and find out all about them. Other people want a degree of aloofness, but everybody wants a pleasant face, pleasant smile, a really respectful, efficient service. And everybody wants that, regardless. It's just a matter of what level of overt friendliness does somebody want. And that takes, it sounds simple, but it isn't, because if you've got somebody very friendly and effusive, they're probably going to be too much for some guests, and that's not good.
And so in terms of outcomes, looking at more broadly perhaps at the performance of crew, how do you measure crew performance? Is it guest feedback, tips, rebookings? What's the measure?
Yeah, good question. And it's all of those things, of course. We get an enormous amount of rebookings. The average person on our boat, the average crew member, gets €60,000 a year tips. So the tips are amazing. It's over 60,000 actually, but the tips are amazing. And we get phenomenal references that are unprompted. So the brokers are always coming back to us with references of how the guests have enjoyed. And we get a lot of people saying it's the best yacht charter experience they've ever had in their lives. So everything tells me that we've got it right. But that doesn't cause me to be complacent, because whenever I go on the boat, I'm always looking at the crew, analysing the crew, analysing the condition of the boat to make sure there's nothing in the least bit that I could criticise, and making sure all the water toys are at the latest specification, all the latest toys so that no matter what somebody wants on Titania, it's all there.
Okay, fantastic. So turning back to perhaps the beginning of your experience chartering out your yacht, is there anything that you underestimated at the start, operationally, financially, or just learned along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I overestimated the ability of captains who are paid a lot of money to run a commercial enterprise. And they weren't commercial enough for me. And I underestimated the effect that my commercialism in the way I wanted to manage crew tips and the way I wanted to manage things to reward longevity, to reward perfection, to reward crew attitudes, to reward everything that I wanted out of the crew, I wanted to manage things in that in a way that drove where the rewards, financial rewards to that crew matched their performance. And I found I couldn't do it because it gave us a little bit of reputational damage because people would say, oh, they held tips back from us and so on. So we had to be more conventional and do it the way that everybody else does it, which is really actually poor management. But if good management damages your reputation, then it's no good. So I got it wrong. I had to give that up. There's not another business on the planet that I can think of where I wouldn't have, where I would have given that up. I would have driven it because I drive performance and drive rewarding people correctly for a great job done.
And then in terms of how you source the right people for the boat, as an example, how do you, when you're, so there'll be obvious cues, I suppose, when you're interviewing somebody or when you're kind of okaying somebody to come onto the crew. Are there any perhaps less obvious things that you've learned to look out for, red flags, that sort of thing, in an interview?
Oh, there's always red flags in an interview. You know, I mean, I've been interviewing people for 60 years now, and there's always red flags. But generally, I don't think we get to a point very rarely where we've got red flags because people have always got a brilliant track record. You can see that right from the beginning, they're pleasant and they've got the right attitude. So we don't come across many red flags. And because Titania's got such an amazing reputation, because the tips are so high and people know they can earn a lot of money, everybody wants to join Titania. So the word in Antibes, which is sort of the recruitment ground of the south of France, is always very positive. And crew tell me that when they were in Antibes and they said they'd got a job on Titania, everybody was envious of them. And that's phenomenal to hear, you know, because if everybody's envious of an employee that you've just appointed to work on your boat, that in itself is an amazing reputational positive.
Absolutely. In terms of where your yacht operates, how flexible do owners need to be, do you think, on cruising grounds to maintain that use?
We are flexible. But you've got to bear in mind that if you're flexible in terms of where you deliver a boat to, you might lose 3 or 4 days charter on delivery and costing a lot of money. Generally, we've got enough demand where we can join things together end to end so we don't lose any days of charter and we don't have costly transport. So we usually manage to make it work without loss.
Okay. And then also on the subject of the operation of the boat in sort of broader terms, you operated through COVID and obviously shifting geopolitics in that time. What do you think has kept the calendar full during those periods of difficult periods?
Well, that's really easy once again, because it's already the answers I've given you. You know, it's kept busy because of reputation. Reputation is absolutely everything. It's there's no doubt about that whatsoever. You know, you just think of it. Just think of it, you go on holiday and you go on a package tour and it's like £2,000 or £3,000. And if some staff winds you up or you don't have a, you know, you can escape them usually because you're in a hotel and you can escape them. And it might not spoil your holiday, it might do. When somebody's paid €700,000 plus for a holiday and they're living with one crew member that maybe in some way antagonizes them, it kills the holiday. I mean, the people, utterly vital, right the way through from the captain to the engineers who people rarely see. Because everybody has to relate to those guests with respect and with service, with great service, and look after those guests like they're the only people that matter. And if you do that, you get a great reputation. And that's the all-time killer. But of course, you've got to have everything else as well. You've got to have the real estate that's beautiful. It's in beautiful condition. Everything has to be serviced and working. All the water toys have to be great. You've just got to get the whole thing right. That is a bit like any business. You know, any business, you need to get everything right if it's to really prosper.
And did you find, particularly during COVID, obviously there would have been periods when perhaps you weren't allowed to operate, but did you find that people were keener to get on board charter yachts?
Well, certainly post the COVID, we didn't lose very much at all because we did have some COVID cases on board and had to take crew out, but we were able to keep going because certain people could still travel. A crew were vaccinated, and if we got the case of COVID on board, they'd go ashore and stay on shore. And we pretty much got through unscathed, mostly. We did lose some revenue, but we got through unscathed on the whole.
Okay, fantastic. And then in terms of how the boat has developed through your ownership and use as a charter yacht, are there things that you've changed and developed and adapted because you realised they were more valuable during that period?
Well, there's a huge amount of changes made right the way through. I mean, it started with an extension of the length, which Lursen did. It enabled me to create the beach club. I moved the gym upstairs onto the top deck, enclosed that with stainless steel enclosures with big panoramic windows, turned that deck where the gym came from into a second owner's suite. I mean, just really changed a lot of things about the boat, which gave more volume, more capacity, more flexibility. And then the interior design, we've constantly upgraded it to, when I had it, it was a little bit oldish in style, old person. You know, it was a bit like a boat that might have been owned by an older person, curtains with all bobbles on and things like that. What we've done is made it a little bit more contemporary, still very classical, but classical with a contemporary twist rather than pure classical. So we've got a beautiful blend now of classical and contemporary, which works really well.
Fantastic.
And we never stopped, by the way. I mean, we've just put a cold plunge pool in the beach club. There was a little bar in the beach club. Didn't really need that. It wasn't used very much because the staff could bring the drinks from the next deck up. So we put a cold plunge pool because we've got a sauna down there. It's got access to the sea, seating area. And now we've got the plunge pool to go with the sauna as well.
Fantastic. So you're constantly upgrading.
Constantly, yeah. Yeah. We're never, ever, ever complacent. We're always looking to see what can we do to give the guests a better experience. We always have the latest water toys, these electric hydrofoils, you know, stand on with a controller in your hand and it comes up out of the water like a surfboard out of the water and onto a hydrofoil and you're gliding along the surface. Anything, sea bobs, jet skis, jet bikes, everything.
And do you, through all this, do you actually get to spend any time on the boat? Or is it?
I do. Yeah, you do. Yeah. I don't spend a lot of time because I've said I spend a lot of time doing other things, but I'll always try and get 2 or 3 weeks a year.
Okay. And how do you personally like to use the boat? Do you?
Well, that's a funny question, really, because boating for me is about being on the water. It is about the service and the phenomenal food. But for me, it's very much as well again about the cycling. So I go cycling 4 or 5 hours every day that I'm on the boat. So I get up in the morning at maybe 6 o'clock, don't have any breakfast, 7 o'clock or between 7 and 8, I'm out cycling and I get back at perhaps 1 o'clock for lunch at 2. So that's how I use the boat. And then I'll have a massage in the afternoon after lunch, and then it's dinner time.
Amazing. So what areas have you found particularly brilliant for that sort of use?
The south of France takes a lot of beating because of the Alps being near too and the mountains. Italy's quite good. The Caribbean is challenging because the roads are almost vertically up and poor quality. So the Caribbean's a bit tough for the cycling. I do it because I've got to. And I do quite like the Caribbean. You know, I like all the varying islands and all the different cultures. But it is very tough cycling.
Okay. And if somebody was considering putting their yacht on the charter market, aside from crew, well, what's an assumption they're probably wrong about?
What would somebody be wrong about the assumption? I think what they'd probably be wrong about is the huge difficulty of getting a brand, a reputation, and keeping the crew at that really incredibly high level of service.
And would you advise them to have people, so you mentioned earlier that you don't get directly involved in some of these, some of the operation. How many people do you think it's useful to have under you managing things? Do you have?
Well, I think first of all, you've got to be a passionate owner like me, a passionate owner who drives everything to get as near to perfection as you can. Then in my case, I've then got a yacht manager who I employ who works for me. And then we've got the brokers, and then we've got great captains. Getting all that together, there's a lot better way of making money. So what I would advise somebody is, if you're really thinking of it because you'd just like to be on your boat 2 or 3 weeks of the year and offset your overheads, you're better chartering my boat. If you really want to turn it into a business, you're actually wasting your time because there's much easier ways of making money. So don't bother.
So why have you done it?
Because I just loved boating, loved yachting. And I would have never been able to charter a boat and be as comfortable that I was going to get the holiday that I now get. And it does make profit. Not a lot, but it makes profit. And I would never get that experience on somebody else's boat. I mean, I might do, but I wouldn't chance that. I wouldn't spend all that money and chance it to luck that they were going to give me the service. I've got my bikes on the boat. I've got somebody that maintains my bikes. They're ready to take me ashore at any moment in time. They know all my likes and dislikes. You know, the crew are immensely dedicated, and it's not easy getting that. I mean, I didn't get it for 3 or 4 years. It took me 3 or 4 years to get all this established and working well. And I have to say, even after that, it got better and better and better. So it's really actually quite tough. And it's a bit of a virtuous circle, because the better you become, the better you can be. Because the good people weed out the poorer people who are not so good. And you just don't end up with any bad crew at all, ever. Or if you do, everybody will want them to go. You just don't want anybody that upsets the environment and the feeling of the boat. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's difficult. So any competitors that want to compete with me, don't bother. Come and charter my boat and save yourself a lot of hassle.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tom. That's probably a good note to end on. Good piece of advice.
In addition to not bothering to compete with me, remember as well that if you charter my yacht, 70% of your charter fee will go to charity during or after my lifetime. But not only 70% of the charter fee, but 70% of all my wealth, whether it's the profit I make or the capital that I've got. So you can also think that when you charter my yacht, you're helping to make the world a better place.
And this is through the Giving Pledge.
And this is through the Giving Pledge. Yeah, but I actually, the Giving Pledge is sort of irrelevant, because I committed to giving 50% of my wealth away long before the Giving Pledge was brought out. When Gates and Buffett brought the Giving Pledge out, I joined, and then afterwards I thought, you know, I can afford to give more than 50% away, so I pledged to give 70% away.
Incredible. So do you have particular charities that you support, or that you plan to support with that money, or is that something that you will develop?
Well, I've got two charities that I founded, Cornwall Youth and Cornwall Children. Those two charities are really, I really passionately believe, and Cornwall Children has been going for 25 years, helps kids with any illness or any disability whatsoever. And Cornwall Youth helps young people that are at risk from criminality, mental health, probably come from the care service, probably had neglected childhoods, and they're vulnerable to all sorts of things, including drugs and sexual trafficking. And we put a one-on-one mentor with them to help them. So those are the two closest to my heart. But clearly, during or after my lifetime, with all of that vast amount of money, there'll be a lot of charities that will help above and beyond that. I've helped about another 50 charities over the last 20 years, in addition to those. But it's highly selective. And I want to help charities that really can make a big difference, and that my money is leveraged into creating the biggest difference possible.
Okay. Well, an excellent reason to charter your yacht.
It is.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode of Boat Briefing, which is a production of Boat International Media and is sponsored by Amico & Co. As always, you'll find the latest superyacht news and features on boatinternational.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.